is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings.
A very warm welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me in the studio is editor Simon Lambert and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce to round up the week's top stories they've been covering on their award-winning website. A happy new year, one and all. And happy it shall be. After a rather gloomy last show looking back over 2016, we'll be looking on the bright side of life. Could savings rates be on the up? The FTSE soaring, boosting retirement pots. Is now the time to consider investing?
We're actually in a good, relatively good period for investors, so I think it's a great time to make the most of it right now.
There are concerns about pension changes coming in this year.
But I suspect there'll be more tinkering by the government with tax relief and allowances relating to pensions. They can't resist, it seems.
But don't worry, we'll prepare you for that. And there's some good news for young people.
These are homes for sale, but at 20% less than market price. Only available to those first-time buyers between the ages of 23 and 40.
If nothing else, the fact that 40 is considered young is cause for cheer. And
see, what I want to say, and the right thing to say, is
do not be tempted by the free football.
Crazy.
And you get grumpy about it.
And the winner... well, should I say loser?
Yes, we'll be putting Lee and Simon's financial knowledge to the ultimate test. It is our very own special podcast quiz of the year.
Sharing ideas about money. This is Share Radio.
But first...
cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life.
Yes, indeed, after the last episode where we looked back over all the events of 2016 and how they could impact us going into the new year. Well, it did end up being a little bit gloomy, didn't it, if you remember Brexit, Trump, gloom, doom. Poor old Lee. As soon as we were off air, Lee, you just sat there, didn't you? Almost bereft. You asked me, where were the funny stories, Georgie? So, Lee, this one is for you. This is our positive episode. It is both your missions today to end every story on a high. We'll be looking at, in the face of all the potential pitfalls ahead that we discussed on last show, how to save and grow your money, how to avoid scams, how to have a happy retirement. But there was no way, nowhere. I remember your face, Lee. I mean, nightmares over the Christmas period for me on that one. Without you talking about your favourite subject, because that's what you really meant, Lee, wasn't it? You weren't asking where are the funny stories. You wanted to say, where are all the money stories? Yes, and it's not just you loving them. We love them too. You have asked whether you should change your website name to This Really Is Money. So, Lee, on the website, you've published 10 of our favourite money stories. A happy new year. This one is for you, Lee. Your moment has arrived. Go.
Happy New Year, Georgie, and I would like this positive, upbeat show today. Come on, the doom and gloom of 2016, it's gone, it's been forgotten, it's a new year. Let's get some happiness injected into this show. Come on.
That's the spirit. That's what I wanted, Lee. Come on. So your 10 favourite money stories.
I couldn't help myself with this, Georgie. I just couldn't help myself. It has been an absolutely supersonic year for people reading about actual physical money, whether it be the new £5 note with Winston Churchill on it, whether it be the last of the round £1 coins that are, you know, going to disappear in a couple of months' time, or whether it be some valuable coins that might turn up in your change. That story has gone wild. So coins that could turn up in your change. People have read it. It's been shared far and wide. I cannot tell you the amount of... rival publications that have copied that story, and how many, it's just, I still can't believe how many people read it. Sometimes
so
it's still the most popular story of the day even though it was published months ago.
But Lee, this isn't something you've thrown together either. You've done some graphs here.
I've got, you know, there's graphs, there's all sorts going on, Georgie. I'd like to take my money coin work very, very seriously. The graph that you're referring to is the graph that actually shows that the £5 note and coins that can turn up in your change is a more popular search term than our own Prime Minister. Wow. In the last 3 months of this year, wow, maybe the £5 note should become the new Prime Minister. I don't know. But
has it got rid of the meat in it yet?
Well,
there was a bit of controversy around it, wasn't there?
I don't know if it was really true, Georgie. No, it was, but I mean, it's just a trace of meat, Georgie.
We've not forgotten Simon here. Simon, well, we gave this to Lee, but, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, that company, the meaty £5 note company maker, was a British company, which actually basically prints most of the world's polymer banknotes, but that's being bought out by the Canadians. So there you go.
Well, there you go.
Someone else's problem.
So yeah, exactly. You deal with... Yeah. That's what we like. A positive end to every story. Simon's
so
on point.
I should just say here that I would like to tip my hat to the man sat next to me, who can sometimes be a very modest fellow. In fact, he is a very modest fellow. And basically, you would have to be hiding under a rock not to have read one of the stories about new £5 notes or coins that are worth more than they're meant to be this year in any number of publications. But actually, I believe that Lee Boyce kicked these stories off. I think I'm safe in saying this. I think I'm actually safe in saying that he kicked off this whole thing about new £5 notes being worth more, because we've done stuff about coins and money that's worth more in the past, and when the new £5 note came out, he had a brainwave and he went off and did some digging and discovered this whole thing about the low serial numbers, then covered the auction with it being auctioned off, then he found the storage hunter Jesse McClure, who actually said he'd been offered real money and turned down real money for
so
a £5 note, and I'm not just talking about
£4.99.
I mean, I was in a pub in the Peak District in late October, in this little village it's pretty much in the middle of nowhere, you know. And I'm stood there, or I'm sat there, actually, and there's a woman paying at the bar, and she goes to hand over a £5 note and then says, "Oh, I better check the serial number on that."
She said,
"Which ones are worth money?" And we were just getting our coats on to leave, actually. I was just standing up getting my coats on to leave, and I couldn't help but sort of interject in the conversation and say, "Well, actually, the ones that are worth money are..." And I didn't explain to her why I knew. I didn't explain that I worked with the man who basically kicked off all this lunacy.
But you know Lee Boyce's Twitter handle? Do you know what? Normally, regular listeners to the show, and Simon, you can concur, and Lee as well, we tend to go for sort of quite a big, meaty story at the start. But what really kicked this off for me, apart from reading your excellent article, was the fact that we went out for a team lunch, Share Radio. What delayed it was someone was late in putting their fiver down because they didn't want to do it before they checked the serial number. And I thought, you are to blame for this.
I have created a bit of a monster. Honestly, people in the office, they go, "Well, can I spend this one? Can you just check it for me?" And I'm like, the only £5 note that is really worth any money is the first batch, which is AA01. If you've got a note that starts AA01, hold on to it. All other notes, probably don't hold on to it unless you really like the serial number. And if you like the serial number, you're a bit strange. But like the AK47 thing,
you didn't like that,
I was not
you?
Involved in that. No. That's nothing to do with me. No. I don't believe that those notes, you can list anything on eBay for any price that you want, and that's the sort of thing that was happening. I didn't want to jump in all that. I'm just going with factual news. I stayed late, Georgie. I stayed late
I
one night
doubtly.
To watch the Bank of England auction, where the note AA01 quadruple 417 sold for £4,150, and I went, whoa. And I stayed, and I published the story that night because it was that exciting. And that is how much I've become a fan of coins and notes this year. And
all right, so that's one of the stories you've got there. That's actually number five. You've got 10. Don't give us them all, but give us perhaps two of your favourite ones.
Well, I think one of my favourite ones was actually an email I received from a friend whose hand now adorns This Is Money forever, because he sent a picture of his 50p coin, which had Benjamin Britten on it. And he said, "My dad said he went to work and they think that a Benjamin Britten coin... it's worth loads of money. Is it true? If I become a millionaire?" And I'm like, okay, so let me look at this coin. Do some research. I actually Googled Benjamin Britten 50p coin. First thing that came up was, what's it worth? Is it valuable? blah, 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 blah.
So your mate's not the only one asking
this
question.
So he's not the only one asking. I sort of cottoned on. I thought, wait a minute, there must be more people asking this question. And it just absolutely blew up. And the answer was that that 50p coin was worth 50p.
That's amazing.
Because it's...
Who'd have thought,
eh? There's 5 million of them minted. I mean, it's not... It's like, so it's an example of a myth that's grown from somewhere and somehow people actually believe it. In comparison, the Kew Gardens 50p, which we wrote about a couple of years ago, there's only 210,000 of those. So they are actually selling online for quite a bit of money. But that Benjamin Britten coin, people were just listing them on eBay for thousands of pounds because they randomly, people were seeing it and spreading it. It's gone like wildfire. So that was one of my favourite ones. Another favourite one, since these stories, the amount of readers that have got in touch with me with pictures of their coins, are my coins worth money? I'm not exaggerating when I say I get at least 20 to 30 coin picks a day.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, it's lovely.
Not sure what you could do with that.
I really enjoy
book.
It. And I get loads of praise. I really enjoy it. People are like, I love your coin stories. You're the coin stories I trust. And I'm like, wow, okay, this has really gone full blown like mad, but I love it. Someone actually emailed me in about an Olympics 50p. So do you remember there was a whole set of Olympics 50p coins, which were minted ahead of the 2012 Games for London? Lovely set of coins, really nice, beautiful on the eye, really liked it, good set. But what actually I didn't realise was in 2009, Blue Peter, do you remember Blue Peter? A TV show that's no longer with us.
There's no more Blue Peter?
I don't think so, am I making it up? I'm not sure.
We're probably a little bit out of the age range.
Well, there's no children's TV at all anymore, is there?
I don't know. Let's stick to
anyway,
quickly.
So she got in touch and said they had a competition on Blue Peter for a child to design one of the 2012 Olympic coins. So someone won that competition, designed a coin, I think it was for the high jump, and it was minted in that year ahead of all the other coins. Now just 19,000 of those coins were made. So they are really rare. If you think that Kew Gardens coin has got 210,000 of them minted and they could sell for up to 50 quid on eBay, this is a coin that's only 19,000 of them. So there was a whole forum about it. People that had this coin, they were really excited about it. And of course, I wrote a story on it and people loved it. People love it, Georgie.
That's amazing. Lee, for anyone who wants to send their coin pictures to you, how can they do that? Let's try and get a load this year.
Well, what they need to do is my address and send a £10 cheque to... No, they can email
me. Send me the coin first and then I'll work out if it's worth it.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'll take a slice of commission, please. Now, you can email me. My email address is just lee.boyce@thisismoney.co.uk.
Some fantastic articles, Lee and Simon. Everything you write on This Is Money is absolutely brilliant. But what's beaten all of that is just your sheer joy right now, Lee, talking about it. I'm going to let Lee bask there in his glory, dreaming of Brewster's Millions, and turn to Simon. You've drawn up a wish list of headlines you'd like to see in 2017, and as editor, I imagine you have some say in this. But did you want to make a comment about Lee just then?
I did. I was just going to say, 25th of November 2016, text message from my wife, Catherine. Is AA35 a good code for a £5 note? My reply?
What have you done, Lee?
Keep hold of it until Lee is back from Australia.
That's the thing. How many people are just holding on to their £5 notes because they think it's quite a low number? I actually dread to think.
It's good savings, isn't it?
It's so many people just keep saying to me, should I hold on to this one?
What have you done?
They're going to have to print more of them to get them back into circulation due to all this hoarding.
Touché. Right, so as I said there, Lee relaxing there, looking rather happy. Look, you've got a little glow around you. It's very cute. Simon, wish list of headlines you'd like to see in 2017. I'm hoping a lot of them are really positive.
Yes, they are. Well, it's all positive, really, I thought, to be perfectly honest. That's what I was doing. I was sort of looking, but this is the time of year when you kind of look back and you look forwards at the same time. And if you're writing a column on the 5th of January, 4th of January for the 5th of January, you find yourself in a weird position because it's, are we looking back? Are we looking forwards? You know, what do we do? And then I thought, well, you know, why don't I write about the things that I'd like to see? So you did say that as the editor of the website, I have a hand in this, which I do. Although we do try to only report news that has actually happened.
The real things.
The real things, okay. Yeah. Apart from coins that are worth fictional amounts. So we do try to hold off reporting news that hasn't happened. So right. I would rely on some of these things occurring before we were to publish these headlines.
That's a fair point. Fair point you make.
So my first one was, tax tricks axed as Chancellor says, I'll play fair. Basically, tax is part of the social contract, should be seen as what we pay for our society. Mm-hmm. But people need to feel it's fair. And the tax system is riven with little tricks that makes people think it's not fair. I mean, how much income tax do you pay as a basic rate taxpayer? How much tax do you pay as a basic rate taxpayer? Most people say 20%. Well, you don't. You pay 32 because you've got to take into account the 12% national insurance. National insurance isn't a small number there, is it? That's quite a lot. There's a big difference between 20 and 32. There's a trick in the tax system, which is very difficult to sort of win much sympathy for this one, because basically it only affects people who earn a lot of money. But once you go above £100,000, for every extra couple of pounds you earn, £1 of your personal allowance is taken off you. So by the time you get to £120,000, you have no personal allowance whatsoever. And that means that you pay effectively a 60% marginal rate of tax. So for every extra pound that you earn, you're paying 60% in tax, when theoretically your actual tax rate is 40%. Now, I mean, I've really struggled to see how anybody could design that and consider it's fair, even if you are hitting people who earn lots of money with it. Because once you go above £120,000, your tax rate then drops back down to 40%, and it doesn't go up to 45% till 150. So I think Chancellor promises to eliminate all the little catches with a message that if people pay up, he'll play fair. Number two, stamp duty cut to 1% across the board for everyone, all the way up, basically. No more of this rubbish of charging people massive taxes on big homes. Well, it starts at 1%, goes up to about 12% on the most expensive properties. Surely not. That's madness, isn't it? But we survived perfectly well with a 1% stamp duty tax rate on all properties until Gordon Brown started cashing in, and then all his people who followed him as well. So interest
rates... Keep it positive.
But we just take it back down. See if we can get some homes on the market, basically. There's a big problem. Not enough people are moving home. Get some more homes on the market. Interest rates rise. You're not going to see that one. Or are you? I think I predicted on the last show that I thought that interest rates would rise next year, although that would only take us back to the 0.5% we were stuck at since March 2009. Economy has been pretty resilient since Brexit. We probably could have raised interest rates at some point. We didn't. We come to 0.25%. Go on the MPC. We dare you.
He's actually written this, by the way, in the article. Yeah.
Government lays out clear and fair plan for diesel cars. Basically,
making the headlines today.
Indeed. And I think the issue here is we spent over a decade being encouraged by diesel cars because we were told they were good for the environment. The tax system favours them. It's nudge economics. And basically, it has meant that more than 50% of cars being sold were diesels. Until people turned around and told us that actually they were worse for our health. So people understandably feel a bit unhappy
aggrieved
about this. Yeah, unhappy about the fact that they were duped, unhappy about the fact that they've got a car that might now be hit with a swinging tax bill, unhappy about the fact that there's loads of cars on the roads that are apparently poisoning them. So what are we going to do
what
about it?
What car do you drive, Simon?
Well, I have one petrol car and one diesel car, right, so I'm evening things out. and I cycle to work.
Very good. All right.
Diesel still accounts for 50% of cars being bought. Councils are bringing in piecemeal restrictions all over the place. The government has been strangely silent on this. It needs to get its act together, tell people where they stand, and come up with a fair plan for it.
OK, now the favourite final headline.
UK and EU seek best possible friendly mutual deal on Brexit. And I said, well, we can always dream.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NSandI.com, helping you keep on top of your savings whenever, wherever.
A very warm welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NSNI, the first of 2017. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me live in the studio is editor Simon Lambert and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce to round up the week's top stories they've been covering on their financial website in a positive way. Now, as you wrote in your article, Simon, whether it turns out to be less malign than 2016 or not, 2017 is a year that will see great change, but with the FTSE 100 soaring since the referendum by over 1,000 points, with some predicting it could reach as high as 9,000 by the end of the year. It's been reported that millions of pension savers received a $300 billion boost for their retirement pots after a six-day run of record highs for the index, the best performance in 20 years. So Is it the right time now to start investing and taking advantage of the turmoil? Here's founder of virtual trading app Investor, Karim Dahali.
I think we're actually in a good, relatively good period for investors. So I think it's a great time to make the most of it right now. It's not always going to be a fantastic time to be an investor. And I think it's really important to take advantage of opportunities when they arise. And I think this is going to be a great year for investors, particularly in stock markets. I think they're going to be, on the whole, it's going to be a positive year for UK markets. But there will be differences. I think we're going to see a continuation of the trends that we saw last year. The market overall went up, but we saw a big outperformance of certain sectors within the marketplace. So the exporters and the commodity companies in particular did very well. And the importers suffered, as we've seen again this morning, particularly in the retail sector. So people who are buying things, companies that are buying things from abroad, which are now more expensive because the pound has gone down, and so our pound buys us less, and are trying to sell it to consumers in the UK, I think they're going to continue to struggle because there's going to be this tension about passing on higher prices to consumers. Whereas the people who sell things abroad and bring their money back and effectively have more pounds for the dollars that they're earning abroad, I think those companies are going to continue to do well. But overall, I expect the market to do better.
So overall, some positives there from Karim Dahali, founder of virtual trading app Investors. Now, Simon, you cover all these sorts of issues on your Minor Investor column. Is 2017 a good time to get involved with investing?
So I'm going to finish on a positive note, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I've got to finish on a positive note. I can start on a positive note as well. Any time is a good time to start investing. Basically, if you want to grow your wealth for the future, then investing is the best way to do it. If you look historically over the very long term, then the returns from investing in the stock market have outstripped the returns from investing in cash substantially. And the key to that is taking the dividends that companies pay you and reinvesting them. That is the thing that makes the real difference, not share price rises. And the index only measures share price rises. It doesn't measure the dividends paid. And in fact, we waited many, many years from 1999, in fact, after the FTSE 100 hit a record high, all the way through to the start of 2015. I think it was early 2015 for the FTSE 100 to finally regain that peak. So basically, that looked like a long lost period. But in fact, if you took into account the dividends that the companies paid, then we surpassed that peak long before then. So if you'd bought a FTSE 100 tracker and you'd held it, you actually would have made money much, much sooner than that. But if you start investing a small amount regularly every month, then you should be fine. The problem is if you invest a large lump sum and the market then suddenly sinks. So if you put £10,000 into the market and the market drops 10%, 15%, well, you've lost, you know, £1,500, £2,000. It's quite a lot of money and it might take quite a long time to get that back. Whereas if you're paying in £100 a month and slowly building it up, then, you know, and the market falls, you will have bought in at other points at lower values. Now, the issue here is everything looks pretty good at the moment, doesn't it? Everyone has basically decided that the stock market is going one way, and that one way is up. And there's a number of factors at play there. Trump is one of them. He's going to increase spending. He's going to cut taxes. He's going to hack back at red tape and regulations, some of which are entirely sensible pieces of regulation and red tape, which so is slightly concerning. And these are all the things that he says he's going to do. Now, whether he's going to actually manage to do all of those things is another matter. The idea is that this will bring a bit of inflation back in, which central banks have been trying to get hold of for ages, and also some growth. You spend more money, it pumps growth into the economy. Now, how much of that money is going to go to the people in the economy who need it? The people who were the groundswell of support for Trump, you know, the blue collar workers, the people in the Rust Belt. How much of it is just going to go to the people who are already rich is a question that needs to be answered and something that we will only see. At the moment, if you analyse Trump's plans, it actually looks like a lot of the money goes to the people who've already got money, not to the people who are really, really struggling. But, you know, there is an argument that says we've been stuck in this low growth world since the financial crisis. We've been struggling to get out of it. So far, the answer has basically involved lower and lower interest rates, printing money and all these other things, and it hasn't really worked. Well, maybe trying something different is a good idea. And that's what a lot of this hope is essentially predicated upon. So that's the reason why the US markets hope to rise. If the US market rises, it probably is going to take up most of the rest of the world with it. The UK market, on the other hand, is a slightly different matter. We've got Brexit hanging over us, but a lot of our companies earn a lot of money overseas. And when that money translates back into pounds, the profits are going to look bigger. So it's going to massage the figures. So you've seen the FTSE rise off the back of that. And also it's rising a bit off this hope that we're also going to loosen the purse strings. But the problem is market slumps and market crashes, the big ones, only really tend to occur when people think everything is going swimmingly. They don't tend to occur when people think that stuff isn't really going very well. And up until maybe a couple of months back, you could have pointed to the fact that whilst everyone was quite nervous, it was probably highly unlikely you were going to see some kind of big crash because everyone wasn't really convinced that anything was going particularly well. Unfortunately, sentiment has now turned around and everyone seems to think that everything is going swimmingly and things can only go up. And to anyone who has any form of contrarian thinking in their bones, that is a massive red flag, to be perfectly honest. So I would just be a bit less gung-ho than some of the things that are being said at the moment. And I think that Karim there was quite cautious in what he was saying.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are lots of people out there who are really, really gung-ho on, yeah, markets up this year, the only way is up kind of thing. And the other piece of caution that I would state is I wrote about this before Christmas about the US market, and the US market is expensive at the moment. If you measure it on this
what
long...
What does that mean?
Why well,
so?
Basically, a valuation, you compare it to earnings. It's essentially how much it costs to buy those companies versus the earnings that you are getting, or also versus the dividend yield that you are getting, or versus the price to book, the price, you know, the price you're paying versus the book value of those companies. On any one of those measures, the US market is pretty expensive. And there's a good long-term measure called CAPE, which is the cyclically adjusted price to earnings ratio.
Keep up, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, what it is a way of smoothing out earnings over time. So it allows for like the economic cycle. And on that measure, you know, the market's not more expensive than it's ever been. The highest was like way off the scale, the peak of the dot-com boom. But it has only ever been more expensive during the dot-com boom and the 1920s.
And we know
what happened both times. It was bad news. And if the US market sinks and takes a really big hit, then it's going to be very, very difficult for the rest of the world's stock markets not to take a hit.
But, Simon,
To end on a positive note, the same is not true of the UK market. The UK stock market isn't particularly expensive. And actually, if you look at global markets and you go all around the world, which is what people should be doing when they invest, actually, there's loads of stock markets around the world that are substantially cheaper than their median long-term CAPE value. So if you go hunting for them, there are opportunities out there. But don't bundle all in. Be a bit cautious. Always question what people are saying. And when everyone thinks everything is going swimmingly, that's the time to ask some questions.
But there are positives out there. So thank you very much. While Simon draws a bit of breath there, well done, Simon. Excellent. For those of us who still don't think that investing is really for them, are there any options in cash savings accounts? I mean, they took a hammering, didn't they, Lee, last year? But is there hope on the horizon that rates may improve? What does 2017 hold in store for savers? Already some signs of better deals with a number of high street accounts, I hear, offering up to 5%.
Right, Georgie, let's rewind a little bit here. So, savings rates in the last couple of years...
Remember, this is the positive show.
I'm starting negatively, right, okay. And I'm going to end so positively, you're not going to know what's hit you.
Oh, fantastically. Okay. All right, I'm ready.
I don't actually know how I'm going to end yet, so I'll all think right. it up. A little. the last couple of years, savings rates have absolutely crumbled. And last year was no different, but now they have crumbled to a point where it is becoming quite difficult to beat inflation. People that rely on their monthly savings interest are taking an absolute hammering. You know, in the autumn statement last in November, we were announced this new deal that's coming out, a three-year bond for 2.2%, but you can only put up to $3,000 in it, so it's not really a long-term solution for anyone. These 5% accounts that MoneyMail, our sister title, written about in the week are regular savings accounts. So,
explain.
If you had a lump sum, this account isn't for you. You can't put this. You can't put a lump sum in this. This is for people that may have started January and thought, you know what's on the top of my list? I'm going to start saving. And these accounts are good for that. So if you have, say, I think usually these accounts, you can put a maximum of about £250, £300 in a month. So it's a slow, steady way to start saving. Usually you can start from £25 a month, which is probably a much more realistic starting point for people. Now, banks such as First Direct offer 5%, although you do have to be a current account customer.
Yeah, double check those, because I think is the same true with M&S
as
well?
Yeah, M&S, yeah, there's a few different ones. So obviously it's a way of rewarding people for, you know, it's another carrot to get you to open their current account, which is the ultimate aim really for a lot of banks, because they can cross sell you lots of other products. But it's a good little account to have if you want to start small. And you think, oh God, I mean, it's only £25 a month. What's the difference is that going to make? And I'm only earning, you work it out and it's actually not that much, because you're getting 25% on that first £25 and then as it builds up. So it's not actual, it averages out over the year. So
well, that's
not...
it. Can you take the money out? Can you stop paying in? When do you pay? When do you get that interest
no,
at the end?
You've got to put a monthly payment in most of these accounts. So you usually set up a direct debit or whatnot, you know, a regular transfer for £50, say. And then over the year, you'll have your £600 worth of savings. And then where that 5% interest is accumulated over the year. Brilliant. So although it might not seem much, if you can spare £50 and you want to start in that savings habit, these accounts are very good. At the end of the year, you can have £600. Maybe you'll put that towards Christmas or the new year, or perhaps that you'll, you know, snowball that, start getting into investing, or, you know, then use that to go into another account. So that's what regular savings accounts are good for. Unfortunately, that's not a solution for anyone that's got a huge, you know, lump sum. And as Sylvia's rightly pointed out in this article, ISAs now, you know, cash ISAs were bread and butter accounts for people. They're tax free. We had a frenzy for a few years where people were always looking for, you know, a brand new cash ISA deal in April when the new tax year started. Banks are scrambling for your business.
So what happened, Lee? What went wrong for cash ISAs?
There's a number of things that have made them less appealing, but the biggest one and the real sort of hammer blow for them was the personal savings allowance, which now means you can earn, if you're a basic taxpayer, £1,000 of interest without paying
How
tax.
How much would you have to save to earn?
It's quite a lot.
It's a lot of money, especially
at the moment, because rates are so low anyway. Yeah. So, you know, if you're getting 1% on your savings, you know, it's quite a big amount. And there's been a little bit of movement in fixed rate accounts. The potential is that they might start creeping up again. So I spoke to a number of experts, as you rightly pointed out there, one of which, James Blower, who used to work as head of savings for a couple of different challenger banks over the years, including Shawbrook and Harrods. So he kind of knows how these things work. And he was saying when a new bank comes in, they're looking to raise between £250 million to £1 billion in savings. So what that means, if there's a wave of new challengers come out, they're going to want to be on the top of the best buy savings charts to get that money in. Last year it was actually a little bit quiet on the new challenger market. The year before there was actually quite a few challengers come in. It really drove up 1 year and 2 year fixed rates, which was quite handy at the time because everything else was falling below. So he's saying that there are at least 17 new banks due to enter the savings market this year. So that's quite a lot. There was just four, he says, last year. So if they start coming in to that market and start coming up our Best Buy tables, people will put money in them and give them a go. And hopefully that will start driving up rates. But elsewhere, it's looking bad.
Lee, I'm not blown away by your optimism and positivity.
Well,
right, sorry,
I've got it. I know how I'm going to finish here positively. Easy access rates have fallen. 1% is the top rate you can get. But yesterday, the post office, they got in touch and they told me they're launching a new Best Buy Easy Access rate, 1.01%. It's gone top of the charts. What? Yes.
yeah. Simon?
I have a positive note related to what we were talking about before savings, which is related to investing. Now, Lee's talking about people who have very large pots of cash. And many of them will rely on those cash lump sums for, you know, some of their income. And they have been really, really hammered. But there is a way they can still get much more income from that, as long as they are willing to take the risk that potentially the money that they have may fall in value over the short term. But if they don't actually need that money, this is the thing, is if you've just got this pot of money that you have in a savings account and you spend the interest, which is what a lot of people used to do, they didn't used to actually have any intention of spending that money. You know, it was there if they needed it for an emergency, but they didn't definitely need £70,000. It was just they were just going to spend the interest on it. Well, if that was me, What I would do is I would invest in an income investment trust. Now, the great thing about investment trusts is the way that they are structured is they're like an investment fund. They pool investors' money together and buy lots of different shares. So they spread your risk for you. You'll have a professional manager looking after your money, making decisions about which shares to buy, which shares to sell. The income trusts tend to be more cautious by their nature. They invest in big, stable companies. And they can also hold money over in the good times in order to help pay the dividends in the bad times. So there are investment trusts out there, a nice long list of them, that through the financial crisis continue to pay their dividends. They never cut their dividends. In fact, there are investment trusts called the Dividend Heroes, which have raised their dividend every year for a very long time. And the one at the top of that pile that I was just going to mention is the City of London Investment Trust. It has increased its dividend payment every year for 50 years in a row. Now, you can pretty safely say that if something has managed to do that, then it's going to do everything it possibly can to avoid breaking that record. OK, so it's going to really, really try to make sure that it can keep raising that dividend every year in a row. The dividend yield on that investment trust at the moment is 3.9%, which is not huge, but it's certainly substantially more than you're going to get on a savings account. And as long as you are willing to take the risk that potentially one day you might open your account and on paper it's worth less money, but because you don't need to sell, you don't need to worry about that at that moment, you could be getting a much higher income and an income that is likely to keep rising year on year if they want to keep up this 50-year record, which I suspect that they do.
You pulled it back. Well done, Simon. All of this information, all the best buys and everything is on your website.
You can indeed find it on our website. In fact, if you search Dividend Heroes, you'll find the Dividend Heroes. If you go to thisismoney.co.uk/save, you will find our independent Best Buy savings tables where we will tell you the cracking rates on offer, like the 1.01% easy access account.
Coming up, it's our alternative money quiz of the year. Who will triumph, Simon or Lee? But first, talking of savings, former Pensions Minister Baroness Altman clearly didn't get our positive news brief, warning this week that pensions are in mortal danger, she said, after the government failed to include them in advice on ways to save. Now, the guide published by the Treasury includes premium bonds, six types of ISA, including the government's new lifetime ISA, but not pensions, which have more generous tax relief than ISAs, of course, and are more efficient for savings. So how under threat are pensions? What does 2017 have in store? Here's senior consultant, financial planners Barnett Waddingham, Malcolm McLean.
But I suspect there'll be more tinkering by the government with tax relief and allowances relating to pensions. They can't resist, it seems, every budget, every autumn statement doing something to it. And there is a case for simplifying the whole tax relief system, but up to now, all they've done is actually complicated it. So I suspect more will happen there. We're also expecting a green paper. That's, if you like, a consultation document from the government about how to fund final salary schemes, which have been struggling during the year in many cases with some pretty high-profile failures, and the role of the pensions regulator. So we can look out for that coming up pretty soon. And finally, as I said, the review of automatic enrolment. How's it working? How are we going to get people to understand how much they need to pay in and what's the best way of going forward? So I expect pensions to continue in the publicity zone for most of next year, and we can expect more changes. And those are the ones that I know about. Goodness knows what else will come up during the year.
So, Simon, you got a job on your hands here trying to talk about something positive when it comes to pensions. It's all been gloom and doom, hasn't it, in 2016? What's on the horizon? I suppose what we can do is prepare for what may be coming in. Are they really in mortal danger?
No, I doubt it.
OK, great.
So there you go. I think that was just a bungle by the Treasury. I think that someone is definitely in trouble for forgetting to put pensions on the ways to save. I mean, Tanya, our pensions reporter, suggested maybe there might be a bit of internal politics going on, as in, they thought, well, pensions aren't ours. Pensions are the DWPs.
Well, in my experience,
the Treasury thinks everything is theirs. So I find that unlikely. I don't know. I think it was just a mistake. I think that, you know, they would... Oh, who knows why they did it? It was a bit silly. Pensions are quite handy, really. And they are the way that most people save for their retirement, largely through their work. But if you don't do it through your work and you're self-employed, you should definitely get one. And basically, the positive thing here is if you put a small amount of money away every year and you start early, basically, then you should be OK.
We love pensions, though.
You should be OK.
But rewind to before the budget, the former Chancellor, George Osborne, and we were writing articles, or you were writing articles, I was just talking about them, about could this be the end of pensions? I mean, they've rowed back on any significant changes, but, you know, the coffers aren't exactly overflowing. Could we see in the next budget perhaps a few more tinkerings, beginning the LISA?
Yeah, I mean, the lifetime ISA, or the LISA, or the LISA, as is horribly referred
Lee's
to.
He's a big fan of that.
Yeah, he's like... basically, is a slightly... it's like, I'll call it half-baked, because it's half good and half bad in the way that it's planned. It's a way of trying to get people to save for their pension, but getting over the problem that they don't know whether to save for a pension or a house. Because unfortunately, both retirement and houses are really expensive. It's trying to get them to combine doing both. The worry is that what they'll actually end up doing is basically taking all of the money that they should be saving for a pension and spending it on a house. Whereas at least with a pension, and if you keep the pension separately to the saving for a house thing, you know, they are different. Also, the issue is realistically, you probably want to be saving for a house and a pension using two different things. So you should probably be, if you're going to be buying a house anytime soon, i.e. in the next 5 years, you should probably be saving that money into a savings account, not investing it. Because otherwise you might have less there when you go to buy the house. Whereas for your pension, that's like 35 years away, and you should probably be investing for that. So there is a bit of a difficulty there. I think the real issue for people is probably that pensions, they're not going to go anywhere. They're just going to get worse and not quite as good as they were. So pension tax relief is the thing that the threat hangs over massively. The principle of saving into your pension out of unearned income is under threat. And the idea is that they might start giving people who are basic rate taxpayers a slightly better deal. Mm-hmm. And so instead of giving them tax relief for 20% tax, they'll give them 33%. But they will also hack back at 40% taxpayers. So 40% taxpayers will no longer be able to save out of unearned income. Now, this is a bit unfair because basically other generations have benefited from this. You might only be a 20% taxpayer now, but you might hope to be a 40% taxpayer one day, and you might be a 40% taxpayer one day. And also, quite a lot of people who pay basic rate tax already get a higher rate of relief because they pay in through salary sacrifice anyway. So that's the thing that's under threat, and I think that's where we might see the change. For people who've already got a pension or are closer to retirement, things have looked pretty bad over the past year. They might actually look slightly better over the next year.
That's exactly what I wanted you to say. Lee, just a quick one, crystal ball gazing. A couple of suggestions this week, raising the retirement age to 70 and the end of the triple lock. How likely both?
Well, I think it doesn't really matter if it goes up to 70 because we'll be replaced by robots in the next 30 years anyway. So who cares? It's fine. No, I think it probably will steadily go up, you know. Ask me in 10 years' time, Georgian, and we'll all see right. Where we're at, because we're all living longer, and that's the thing, you know, where's the balance? You know, triple lock, well, you know, that's been going on for ages. Will that get tinkered with? Will it get axed? Oh, Georgian, what can I say? I mean, Simon describes things as half-baked. I sometimes think they're quarter-baked. I mean, who knows?
It's my answer. I wish economic forecaster would go, do you know what? I'll just ask me in 10 years' time.
Share Radio Morning with Georgie Frost.
Gentlemen, your time hath arrived. Now, Simon, we all love a good quiz, and you have not failed us on your website. You gift to us the This Is Money quiz of the year 2016. How well do you remember the big news? Listeners to the show will obviously have a head start on that one. I was tripped up, by the way, on how much the price of the cheapest Ford Fiesta increased by in September. But rather than bone up on your motoring pages, Lee and Simon, I've decided to spend my time more fruitfully. So I offer you in return the podcast quiz of the year. 12 questions. You've both got your arms folded there. This is getting intense. For 12 months of the year, there are prizes as well. There is, for the winner, Lee, I'm hoping it's you. It's a big round coin, pound coin. There's chocolates, not because it was half price in the Christmas sales that are going on at the moment. And I'm afraid I couldn't get a wooden spoon, so you have instead a turquoise spatula that came free with Good Housekeeping. Other magazines are available. The first to call out their name answers the question. Judge producer Tom has the final say on any dispute. Thank you. Good morning, Tom. So first, let me take you back to January. While we were basking in our latest taste test glory, this is Money and Money Mail left companies quaking in their boots over the festive periods as we voted in our thousands for who we thought had Britain's worst customer service.
This is the annual wooden spoon held by Money Mail, and the winner, well, should I say loser,
was...
Simon. I didn't win the wooden spoon. Talk.
It was not.
Oh. I think I'm going to go...
Oh, I knew who it was.
I'm going to go Scottish Power.
No, it was not.
It was BT,
oh,
wasn't it?
You can't... No, that doesn't count. But for a bonus question, how many times has BT won the Wooden Spoon
Lee.
Award?
Two.
Lee, you're rubbish at this. Can you write the article? Simon?
Four.
No, it was three. It was 2008, 2013.
So we can't even get the person who got closest.
Okay, no.
That's a rubbish tiebreaker.
Number two. What the price of love? In February, ahead of Valentine's Day, you looked at the cost of insuring engagement rings. But what are we spending on average for the ring itself? Closest gets the point on this one.
Simon. And firstly, I'll say that all studies about how much people spend on engagement rings are basically completely made up and massively overestimate the amount because they're produced by the engagement ring industry. I reckon the engagement ring industry says £1,800.
I was going to say £1,200.
Lee is closest. It was £573.
Wow.
Oh, wow. This actually be a true answer then.
Oh, that's good news.
In March, do not be tempted by the free football that comes with the credit card, because I can tell you what, that credit card and the debt last a heck of a lot longer than the free football did. It was good while it lasted, though. Well, actually, that was in April. This is Money gathered economists and financial experts together to ask them for the one money tip that they give an 18-year-old. That was the tip I gave myself. What was Rachel's answer?
Oh, Georgie, this is difficult. We've had Brexit and Donald Trump since then. Right. I'm still thinking.
Simon.
Right.
I reckon that actually she said something about giving an 18-year-old. She said something about spending money. She said travel. Spend money on travelling or something.
Oh, you are so close, but not.
I don't know. I'm not even going to make anything up. I don't know the answer.
Rachel said start saving as soon as possible, but she did say, in theory, that's what I should say. What I did do was travel, and she can't have any complaints. So, Simon...
Half a point.
You get a point for that.
Whole point?
Someone's got to win.
Goodness me. Someone's got to get a point in March.
Crazy. When I first started This Is Money, 2010, 2011, it was as big an event as the budget. Like, genuinely, it was crazy.
What event was Lee
talking?
Lee.
Cash ISAs
season. That's right. In May, we discovered just how big the Bank of Mum and Dad is. It's the equivalent of a top 10 mortgage provider, according to Legal & General. Barclays moved to tap into this with a no deposit mortgage for the first time buyers.
Well, it's a bit of a funny one, this, because it's not technically 100% mortgage, really, because Bank of Mum and Dad are still having to stump up 10% deposit. So this deposit's still having to come from somewhere. In a nutshell, it's a three-year fixed mortgage, 2.99%. Your parents or your grandparents, they act as a kind of guarantor. So they put the deposit in and it's kind of held enough 3 years they could take it away. But that is based on house prices still going up.
So that was Lee there. But I want to know, according to Halifax, what is the average age of a first-time buyer in the UK?
Lee, 29.
Simon?
32.
No, it's 30. For a bonus point, what is the average age in London?
Lee, 36.
No.
Simon, 34.
It's 32. Something happened in June relating to the EU. I don't recall what it was. But alongside Brexit, you might have missed it, you uncovered the story of a man who, fed up with the financial system, buried what in his...
Lee. Bars of gold.
And for a bonus point, what was his name?
Hugo Beans. I've got no idea.
Scrooge McDuck.
It was Ron. Now, we've all heard of road rage, but in July, we discovered something new to watch out for.
You get there and you discover someone's in your favourite spot, or they've parked right outside your house, and you get grumpy about it. And I live on a road in London, and I come home sometimes, and I don't get too grumpy about it. But it is annoying when there's nowhere to park and you have to walk a bit to your house.
And on he goes. That parking rage we got. But where in the UK is the worst place for parking rage? Hint, it's not Islington, Simon.
Lee. Kensington.
No.
Is it as specific as that, or is it, like,
no,
broader?
It's like a city.
Oh, Manchester?
No, it's Newcastle.
Georgie, you've made this quiz
you're
hard.
You're not doing too well, guys. You said most of this. Okay, so Brexit bonanza for property hunters, it was called. In August, we found out that one in three homes for sale had its asking prices slashed after the EU vote, according to the property website Zoopla.
I think it's just a period of uncertainty, so people are not sure what to do. So some people are taking homes off the market, but then there's also a case where people are actually quite keen to move on.
But what was the average discount that Zoopla found?
Lee, 10%.
In terms of money, cash.
Oh, blimey, you've got to be more specific. Yeah, if this was Mastermind, you'd have to say in monetary
okay,
rate. In
all I'll say 10,000, 25,000 or 30,000.
Multiple guests, now we're talking.
25,000.
You didn't say your name,
Lee. 25,000.
All right, I'll give you that one. Okay, one of the buzz trends of recent times has been the rise in behavioural economics. In September, HMRC unveiled a new way to nudge us to pay our tax. But what was it?
Lee, sticking post-it notes on with personalised messages.
Always flying away with this one, Simon. In October, we got Marmite Gate, a public spat between Tesco and Unilever over prices, caused panic that many of our favourite branded goods may disappear from supermarket shelves.
The good news for Marmite lovers, other than the fact that Tesco is on your side, is that I have just done a search on my supermarket, which compares the cost of that 500-gram iconic glass jar of Marmite. And do you know what it costs at the moment across Asda, Morrisons, Waitrose and Ocado?
Do you know what it costs?
Simon, £4.50.
Wait, what size?
It's the 500 one, you just said.
£2.36.
Simon, I said £4.50 when you asked at the time. The time is £4. OK, so in November, Donald Trump defied the polls, the critics and indeed social norms to become the president of the United States. But what number president is he?
The
Lee, 52.
Simon, 43rd?
45th, but Simon, you were closest, so I'll give you a point for that. In December, we had the annual Christmas taste test. If we thought turkey ham was the low point of the 2015 test, those, I want to say olive colour, but I think it's more brown. Brussels sprouts were a gift to me in June. Were they not, Rich Browning? From your good self. As my Christmas present.
It all makes sense now.
It was a Christmas present for either last Christmas or this one.
Oh,
but the great thing about those is they last until...
No, they don't look
not
good.
Next year, but the Christmas after that.
It's decomposing
the gift that
in that pot.
Giving. The gift that keeps giving, indeed. A little one on both taste and price. The sprouts, I should point out, were from the local corner shop. But not a week after that victory came the bombshell for the German discounter. What was found in two batches of gravy granules?
Lee, metal.
Simon?
New £5 notes.
Close. Chemical in paint stripper. I can tell you, totting up the scores there...
There's two losers.
Out of a possible, I believe it's 13 points. Simon, I'm afraid you got two. Lee got five, so the round gold chocolate coin goes to Lee. It seems very appropriate.
It's going straight on eBay. I'm going to pretend it's rare. I'm going to put some sort of print on it and see how much I can get.
Take lots of photos of it, send it to yourself. And Simon, you get the turquoise spatula.
Is it not a point, a mark for getting your name right?
Editor Simon Lambert and Consumer Affairs Editor Lee Boyce, thank you so much for joining us.